You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 290 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on a Monday evening. It's a Tuesday morning. In fact, it is already Tuesday morning as I record this podcast. It's very late into the night. Normally, I record this thing a little bit before midnight, but here we are. The Hawks played. It was an 8:30 p.m. Eastern time tip-off in San Antonio, and then, of course, Falcons were playing. I had to do a rewatch of the game, et cetera, et cetera, and look at the time, and here we are post-midnight into Tuesday morning. So apologies for a slight delay there if you're a late-night listener. Normally, I post the podcast at midnight, but it's a little bit after that, so hopefully you're being patient with me on this fine evening. The Hawks, of course, lost by a final score of 96-85 in San Antonio. For those of you who might be a little bit newer and maybe not seen this anywhere else, the Hawks have not won San Antonio since 1997. That is the simple way to put it. In 1997, I was in the sixth grade. For a little bit of reference as to how old I am, perhaps. Also, the last time the Hawks won in San Antonio, Tim Duncan had not been drafted yet by the Spurs. He, of course, played a Hall of Fame career about 20 years and is already retired. John Collins was not born the last time the Hawks won in San Antonio. And the leading scorer for that game for the Hawks was Steve Smith, who's now, of course, been on NBA TV broadcast for a while. The leading scorer in that game for the Spurs was Vernon Maxwell, which I'll tell you everything you need to know about that, but just how long ago that was when the Hawks won there. And there were times in this game on Monday evening when it seemed like the Hawks had a chance to win, but ended up losing by 11 points. It was probably closer than that final score indicated, but still, Atlanta was not able to sort of pull the trigger on a victory in this spot. A couple of just news and notes, not really news, but just notes on the game in terms of just big picture stuff before we get into player-by-player evaluations. Dennis Schroeder left the game in the first quarter, banged into LaMarcus Aldridge in a pretty severe way, was out for not very long. He did end up coming back, and Dennis played 31 minutes in this game, third most minutes on the team in this particular night. So it wasn't as if he was out for a long period of time, but just something to file away. DeAndre Bembry played a little bit in the first quarter. In fact, the Hawks played very, very small at one point where Bembry was playing power forward in a lineup with Dennis Schroeder, Malcolm Delaney, Bembry, Bazemore, and I believe it was Deadman at the time, but basically a four-guard alignment, which was something interesting because for the most part in this game, the Hawks played two bigs because San Antonio plays two bigs quite a bit. They start Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge, allowing the Hawks to play a lot of big lineups. You know, John Collins famously started the second half of this game. Part of that was the fact that Luke Babbitt was ruled out with a back issue at the halftime break, but still, you know, we saw a lot of the Collins-Deadman pairing more than we've seen all season long by a wide margin. And I think that part of that, at least, was the fact that San Antonio is really one of the few teams remaining that really plays true traditional bigs and honestly two full-blown centers. I know LaMarcus Aldridge does not love being described as a center, but he is a center in today's NBA game, basically any way that you can slice it. So that kind of gave Bud some ammunition, it looks like. And I know a lot of Hawks fans were excited about that, and with good reason, because you want to see more of John Collins in any way necessary. But yeah, just something to follow away. I'm not sure this means that the Hawks are going to suddenly play two bigs all the time or start Collins or do something like that. But definitely, you know, some encouraging signs from that alignment in this game. Elsewhere, Spurs opened the second quarter of this game. The first quarter was actually quite interesting and back and forth. You know, the Spurs ended up being up by two at the end of the first. But from there, it was a 20-8 run to open up the second quarter from the Spurs, take a 14-point lead. The Hawks did battle back a little bit and were only down by eight at the break. But the damage was sort of done there. In the first half, the Hawks had an 80.6 offensive rating, which is brutal, obviously. 37% from the floor and 22% from three in that first half. Dennis Schroeder was particularly bad that first half. Did not really necessarily improve a whole lot there. Also, the Hawks played only nine guys in the first half. Only Deadman and Collins and Luke Babbitt, who of course started, played any of the minutes as big men in that first half because the Hawks did go small. As I mentioned before, there was some Prince minutes at power forward. There was some Bazemore minutes and some Bembry minutes at power forward. But a shortened rotation. There was no Ilyasova, no Kavanaugh in that first half. In the second half, that did change, I will say, just because Babbitt left the game. But more than that, we saw Ilyasova and Kavanaugh at various points. Also, some really encouraging drives to the rim from Torian Prince in that first half. Really, he played for the ball all night long. We'll talk about that a little bit later on the podcast, but some especially good offensive possessions in that first half. In the second half, the Hawks went on a 13-6 run to open the second half, and they got within 1 point. A couple of times in the second half, they got within 1 point of taking the lead, but San Antonio just would not allow them to get over the hump. Ilyasova came in cold for Collins in that third quarter, and then, of course, he was followed up by Kavanaugh. Some interesting substitution strategies there from Bud. I'm not really sure what the point of all of that was. It seemed, at least to me, that they were going to go this entire game without playing Ilyasova. If Babbitt had been available, that probably would have happened. But we kind of don't know now. I suppose. But normally, if guys don't play in the first half and there's no injury or foul trouble, you don't really see them in the second half. So, I'm not really sure what that means long term. But Ilyasova is still not a guy who the Hawks are trusting a whole lot there. Last thing on before we get to the actual player stuff was that John Collins picked up his fifth foul before the end of the third quarter, but Bud went right back to him to start the fourth quarter, which I thought was interesting and encouraging. I like to see. I kind of talked about that with Jeff Siegel on a recent podcast, talking about how we wanted to see Collins play with foul trouble a little bit more. He managed to get all the way to the end without fouling out of this game. When Dedmon had five fouls as well, so the Hawks were put in some precarious positions there with those two guys being in foul trouble on a night when they did not have Babbitt either. But Collins being able to last basically an entire quarter without fouling out is very encouraging to me on a number of levels. Before we get into the player stuff, I do want to talk to you about a new sponsor, and that sponsor is MyBookie. Ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking for all kinds of advice. Usually it's something having to do with the Hawks, but even some betting advice. I talk about this kind of stuff all the time, sort of in passing, for more informational purposes than anything else, talking about what the Hawks' lines are. And let me tell you this, when you're betting, for me, it's where you're betting is just as important as who you're actually betting on, and that's why I tell people to go to MyBookie.ag. MyBookie's been in the business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing absolutely nothing, and they have the fastest payouts in the business seriously, which is 2 business days before payouts. With that said, I would only recommend that service to the listeners because they basically are able to deliver what they said they're going to be able to do. And I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie in that way. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go an absolute breeze. You need to join now, and MyBookie will match your first deposit up to 100% with that bonus money if you use promo code LOCKEDONNBA. That's LOCKEDONNBA to activate that offer. You need to visit MyBookie.ag today. Take advantage of this fantastic offer. You play, you win, and you get paid. Thanks to MyBookie for sponsoring the podcast today. And let's get into some player stuff here. Obviously, there were some highs and some lows in the 11-point loss. The Hawks were underdogs by about 9 points in this game, so losing by 11. Nothing crazy. Vegas is pretty good at this, I will say. With that said, on the bench, we'll start with the bench first in this particular game. The guys who didn't play a whole lot of minutes, Ursula Ilyasova played 7 minutes, 5 points, actually looked a little bit better than he has in recent times, but again, as I mentioned before, did not play at all until the second half of this game. DeAndre Bembry only played really one stint, played 4 minutes, was a little bit more than in the previous game. I'm still waiting for Bud to sort of unleash him. Hopefully that will come on Wednesday at home. With that said, I just want to see more of him in general. I thought there were some encouraging flashes from him, and the fact that Bud was willing to look to Bembry in a small ball lineup as something of a pseudo-power forward was encouraging to me, but still want to just see more of him to sort of make any sweeping judgment. He did have a very nice pass for an assist in that 4 minute time period that he was playing. The rest of the bench actually was very, very active. Malcolm Delaney played 30 minutes in this game, which was jarring when I saw it after the game. I didn't really realize that he played that much. Did not score, was 0-5 from the floor, 0-3 from three, so obviously not the greatest offensive performance from Delaney, but he did have 5 assists and no turnovers, which is very encouraging. He was a game worst, minus 15 for the Hawks. I'm not sure that's indicative necessarily of the way that he played individually, but he's going to have to make some shots. Coming into the night, I should say, his shooting was much better than it was last year, obviously, and there's been some times this season where Delaney has really shot the ball well. This is not one of those games, obviously. I will say, just as a point of clarification, coming into the night, he was shooting 46% from three. That's obviously going to drop with an 0 for 3, but still solidly north of 40%. If he can just be that kind of guy, even in small sample, that's pretty encouraging. Marco Bellinelli played 30 minutes as well, was 4 of 13 from the floor. He got ice cold in the second half of this game. He had 11 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. was one of six from the three-point range. And, same sort of thing was Bellinelli as usual. And the Spurs are one of his many former teams. I thought there were some flashes, especially in the first half from Bellinelli. But if he's not putting the ball in the basket, there's sort of a limit there. I probably would have played him a little bit less than Bud ended up playing him on the stretch. But when you're trailing, I understand why you want to go to Bellinelli to sort of get some points and munches when you can get hot and win you a quarter. And you probably needed that in this game. It just never really came for Bellinelli in the spot. Finally, on the bench, John Collins had the best game of his career statistically. 21 points, a career high mark there, and it was 10 of 12 from the floor. Only two free throw attempts. He was 1 of 2 from the line, but had 9 rebounds, 4 offensive, 5 defensive, and 2 blocks. 2 turnovers, those 5 fouls I mentioned before, but 36 minutes, also a career high for Collins. He was the second most played player behind Torian Prince in this game. And look, a lot of that was because he was able to stay on the floor in the fourth quarter, but even before that, he was playing a lot, playing more power forward. I cannot quibble at all with him playing so much in this game because, he's got fresh legs, but 21-9, pretty indicative of the way he played. He was -1, which is pretty good in an 11-point loss. And Collins finishing at a high level. There were times when he was actually missed. Probably should have a few more opportunities when guards missed him, especially Dennis Schroeder a couple of times in the pick and roll. But Collins was great in this game. I mean, there's still some rookie stuff every once in a while, but he played very well here. The numbers kind of tell that story. But anytime you can have a career high, because it's obviously not the situation where he's not been playing a whole lot. He's been playing pretty frequently here and playing and producing at a high level. So to see two career highs is pretty encouraging there. Starting five wise, Kent Bazemore really struggled from the floor in this game. Was 2 of 13. It was 1 of 5 from three. I thought his floor game was actually decent in this game. 5 points, 5 rebounds, and an assist and a steal and 2 blocks. Had actually 2 kind of monster blocks in the first half. But, when you shoot that poorly, it's going to sting in a big way, and it did here. I mean, Kent's just got to make open shots. I didn't think he played terribly, but, you have to make shots. That's kind of the long and the short of it here for Kent Bazemore. I didn't think he was awful, but still, 2 of 13 is not going to win you many games when you're as prominently involved as he usually is offensively. Then a shooter, 14 points, 9 assists, had 4 turnovers, had 2 steals, 6 of 14 from the floor, and 2 of 3 from 3. So his numbers look, reasonable. I thought Dennis was pretty bad, honestly, in this game. The 9 assists are encouraging, but there's still times where he's not really seeing the floor in a way that I would hope he would. But more for me, it's always defensively. I think he was pretty inattentive for most of the night defensively. There were times when he's locked in, when he looks fine, but sort of especially the subtle things that you would hope for him getting and sort of developing are kind of. At the forefront. I will say, the spotlight's more on Schroeder than most people on the team, if not everybody, aside from maybe Collins right now and maybe sometimes Prince, but that kind of probably sheds a little bit more of a negative spotlight on Schroeder when he does things wrong. I notice probably more often, and I'm guilty of that just by focusing on him more often than everybody else, but still, I just didn't think he played very well here, even though the numbers weren't awful, and he wasn't terrible in this game by any means, but I just didn't think he played particularly well, especially defensively with some of the frustrating issues that he has on that end of the floor. Dwayne Dedmon, 11 points, 9 rebounds, had 2 block shots, 4 turnovers, was pretty not great for Dedmon, but was the only player on the Hawks team in the plus. He was +9 in 27 minutes. That sort of speaks to the fact that maybe you think he should have played more. I'm not sure about that. Collins was obviously pretty good in this game. Dedmon played well, though. 5-8 from the floor, made his only 3-point attempt. Until we see it more often, people are going to want to see more Collins and Dedmon together, if only because those are the two best big men right now for the Hawks anywhere. So if you can play those guys together, then sure. I think certain matchups are going to be sort of driving in that way. And as I said before, the Spurs matchup is a good one to play that unit. There will be times when it's kind of unplayable against smaller teams, but when it's able to be deployed, I want to see a little bit more than that, even though I still think that Collins is a center long term. But because Dedmon's on the roster and is clearly the best big man on the team, aside from Collins, those guys should probably play together a little bit more, although I definitely understand why Bud is not doing that because of the fact that I think both guys are centers long term. Torian Prince, 18 points and 8 rebounds. Again, I mentioned earlier that he had some really encouraging offensive moments in the first half. It probably extended the entire game, honestly. He is from the area in San Antonio, so something of a homecoming for Torian. Good to see him play well in that way. Defensively, a couple of hiccups for me, but very efficient offensively. 18 points on 13 shots, not bad, despite the fact that he missed 5 three-point attempts. He was 2 of 7 from 3, which isn't too bad. It was 0-3 from the free-throw line, which is not something you want to see. It's a small sample, obviously, but I thought Torian was was pretty good offensively, pretty aggressive as well, which is something you want to see. But aggressive while being under control. There are times when he was when he's probably overconfident in his offensive game. But if you could have that sort of be channeled, it looks really good when it's going well and he's under control. And he was pretty much that for most of this game. Lastly, Luke Babbitt went scoreless before he left the game. He was 0-3 from the floor in 7 minutes. Of course, I should mention again that he left the game with a back issue. The Hawks are just calling it a lower back issue. I'm not sure how much this is going to linger, but it's clearly lingering a little bit if he was able to not really get it going here. It's about about a week now of this kind of being an issue for Babbitt, so we'll keep an eye on it. But he was listed as probable in this game. The only guy that, aside from Isaiah Taylor, was ruled out of this game before it started was Mike Muscala. He was ruled out with the ankle. Miles Plumlee was available, just did not play here, as well as Tyler Dorsey was available, and Nick Prissino ended up being inactive. But that was your crew of guys that Bud still played 11 guys here, but that's not really true necessarily. I mean, Kavanaugh played 2 minutes. That's not really worth talking about a whole lot there, just because he only played that one stint. But he did have a steal to get in the box score. But for the most part, it was a 10-man rotation that honestly might have just been 9 had Babbitt stayed upright throughout the game, and there wasn't so much foul trouble for the Hawks. So offensively, kind of a struggle. 91.6 offensive rating. Defensively, it actually was pretty decent. The Spurs are not exactly this high-powered machine right now in the absence of Kawhi Leonard, but still holding them to a 103.4 offensive rating is not too bad, especially because the Spurs got 32% of their misses on the offensive rebounding rate, which is pretty ugly. The Hawks did not do a very good job on the defensive glass and really on the glass overall, but especially on the defensive glass, that's going to be a problem moving forward if they can't improve on that. But it's not been too bad this season most times. Sometimes it's kind of been pretty obvious out there, especially when Collins is not playing, that the defensive glass has been a problem. But it didn't scream at me watching the game necessarily. There were a couple of times where it was frustrating, but some unfortunate bounces in there as well. So that's kind of what it is. The Hawks are going to be the Hawks are now 3-14 on the year. This is a loss that you kind of expected. If you look at the schedule coming into the year, you don't expect to go in San Antonio and win. The optimism was a little bit there in the absence of Leonard, because of course they're not the same team without Kawhi Leonard. But still, the Spurs are now 11-6 without him. So it's not like this is some sort of a run over team. And the Hawks now come home for 3 straight home games: Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. A 3-game and 4-night homestand is not a normal thing, but for those of us that are going to be around, it'll be very busy over the weekend and in the holiday weekend. But hopefully the Hawks can go into that schedule and come out with a couple of wins here, and that's something to keep an eye on, because if they don't do that, the schedule gets a little bit more daunting. I will say, though, this next game on Wednesday, and we'll talk about it a little bit more on tomorrow's show, the Clippers are coming in Wednesday night, and the Clippers are in an absolute tailspin right now. So that's... on one hand, they might be due for a more positive performance, and they're a little bit banged up right now, but on the other... the Clippers are now 5-11, have lost 9 games in a row, so probably getting them in a good time. If you want the Hawks to win games, obviously I will always get the retort from somebody somewhere about how the Hawks need to be losing. I totally understand that. The Hawks not winning a ton of games this year is not going to bother me a whole lot. You want to see encouraging losses, and there have been a lot of those, so that's not too bad. They're not getting blown on a regular basis, so that's kind of where we are at this point in time. So I appreciate everybody listening to the show. I appreciate your patience on just being a little bit late and getting it up on this fine Monday night into Tuesday. So we'll be back tomorrow with some sort of preview-ish of the rest of the weekend, that kind of podcast. Might have a guest. I have one person sort of floating out there. Hopefully that's going to come to fruition. But at the worst, you'll have me by myself, and we'll talk about some Atlanta Hawks basketball tomorrow to tide you guys into the weekend, of course. And we'll wrap up the game on Wednesday for the Thanksgiving pod. So stay tuned as always, everybody. Please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Check out MyBookie as well, and that promo code LockedOnNBA. Check that out for absolutely for sure. And it's a good time to do it with Thanksgiving around the corner and a lot of sports on TV to get through and avoid your family at all costs. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you guys tomorrow.